At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are some stories that haunt a city because they never really end. Ellen Greenberg is one of them. For 14 years, the end of her life has hovered over Philadelphia like a storm cloud that just won't move. 20 stab wounds, a locked apartment door, and I put that in giant air quotes, a beautiful young teacher with no history of violence or psychosis found with a knife in her chest, declared a suicide. Not to mention 20 other stab wounds. Looks like there was other bruising at different stages of healing. You know, things that you don't want to look at and go, is there more to this story? Nah. In Philadelphia, we don't look at those sort of things, especially when your uncle's a high-powered attorney, and this could look really, really bad. So let's take all of her digital devices after she commits suicide, because you need them for the funeral, right? Oh, yes, all that happened, too. Now in 2025, we have what's being billed as a fresh look. It's really a bunch of bullshit packaged to say a fresh look. As we've learned this week, a brand new supposedly independent review by Dr. Lindsay Simon. Oh, she's got her stuff together, doesn't she? The chief medical examiner of Philadelphia, who also believes that someone stabbing themselves 20 times independently with bruises in various stages of healing and no investigation and a man who has no evidence that he broke down a door other than claiming he did, that was locked from the inside, is right. We should just believe the story. Right, Lindsay Simon? Because people stab themselves 20 times all the time, including wounds that are postmortem. So again, Ellen would have had to come back from the dead again for this to be real. Philadelphia says zombies live. This was supposed to bring clarity. Instead, it feels like the city just set its own credibility on fire. Again! But what do you have to burn when it's already gone? Let's be clear. This wasn't an outside investigation from the start. This was the same medical examiner's office that ruled Ellen's death a homicide, then reversed itself to suicide within weeks, now reviewing its own failure a decade later while being sued over it. Yeah. It's like the arsonist showing back up with a clipboard to write the fire report. You're suing me. I don't want anybody to know this was an arson, so I better tell you in my notes that it was not an arson. That's exactly what happened. We live in a weird time, don't we? Where reality can just be suspended. If it doesn't fit your narrative, doesn't fit what you want to say, what you want out there, and you have enough power and enough money and enough insulation, enough pressure, you can get away with pretty much anything. Dr. Simon's 32-page independent review reads less like an act of truth-seeking and more like an exercise in institutional self-preservation, a meticulous, bureaucratic march towards the only conclusion the city could afford to reach, that Ellen Greenberg killed herself and no one in Philadelphia government got it wrong. Wouldn't it be great if there was consequences for the people who continue to cover this sort of stuff up? I would think it almost goes into, like, complicity to murder at some point. Because if you were doing this on the street, not in a government-sanctioned way, if you were, like, literally being questioned in court, did you do anything to help cover this up? Yes, I completely ignored all of the evidence and made things up. Completely went against all science and medical knowledge and understanding and put complete bullshit on paper. That's a crime in itself. We can't prosecute that. Not when it comes from official sources, because if it's an official source, it must be right. It must be true, right? Let's start with what she was asked to do. Her mandate was narrowed. Decide if Ellen's death would remain a suicide or be changed to undetermined or homicide. She claims she reviewed everything. The ME files, police reports, photos, expert opinions, and even the Hulu documentary, Death in Apartment 603. Sounds impressive on paper. Not really. But when you strip away the paperwork, the bias bleeds through the margins. Because from page one, Dr. Simon builds her case backwards, starting with the assumption that Ellen must have been alone, and then using every piece of conflicting evidence to reinforce that idea. It's the forensic version of confirmation bias, a closed loop that protects the city first and the truth. Who needs the truth when you don't want to get sued? Second, let's talk about the locked door. This detail has been weaponized for years. The supposed proof. No one else could have entered the apartment. Dr. Simon acknowledges conflicting accounts, but somehow manages to resolve it by treating the most convenient version as fact. She notes a medical examiner's original investigator reported two versions of the events, one where the fiance was alone when he broke the door, another where the apartment staff witnessed it. She admits the records don't say who actually confirmed that. Then she just picks the version that helps, like a choose your own adventure. She calls it reasonable to conclude he was alone, not because the evidence proves it, but because the surveillance footage shows him in the building before and after. It's not reasoning, that's reconstitution for comfort. But the thing is, it doesn't play into the rest of your narrative. The same goes for the blood evidence. She writes that the scene showed no sign of struggle, that all the blood was confined to the immediate vicinity, and the knife in Ellen's chest matched the overturned knife block. Then she jumps to a breathtaking conclusion that the absence of more blood splatter or a messy struggle supports suicide. In other words, because Ellen didn't spray enough blood on the walls, she must have stabbed herself. That logic would make sense only if you ignore how fast a stab to the aorta can incapacitate someone, and how often crime scenes look deceptively clean after quick targeted violence. But it fits the city's preferred story, so it stays. Then there's the autopsy. Dr. Simon agrees with the original findings. 20 stab wounds, now revised to 23. They've added more. After she identified three that were missed. I don't know how you miss these sort of things. It's your one job. But okay. She concludes that many are clustered on Ellen's neck and back, areas almost no suicide victims ever target, but insists they could be self-inflicted. That word could becomes a lifeline of the report. Every implausible injury becomes merely unusual, not impossible. Every inconsistency becomes a variation. It's the language of plausible deniability, not science. The spinal cord wound is the most stunning example. Earlier reports, including forensic pathologist Dr. Wayne Ross and neuropathologist Dr. Lucy Rourke, found that the injury to Ellen's cervical spine could have incapacitated her. That would mean she couldn't have delivered the rest of the wounds herself. Dr. Simon's answer? She calls it an artifact, an accidental puncture made by the coroner's probe during autopsy, that it wasn't really there to begin with, even though it was. And if we say maybe this happened, well, then it must have happened, right? That explains her stabbing herself after she was incapacitated and couldn't have possibly done it. Sure. A one-in-a-million coincidence that just happens to erase the single finding that undermined the suicide theory. Magic. Magic. If you want to get away with murder, go to Philadelphia. This is where the circular reasoning tightens its noose. If you remove every finding that points towards homicide, bruises, neck hemorrhages, spinal injury, and dismiss them as artifacts, what's left? Well, a version of events that can only end one way. The city clearing itself to blame. Because that's most important. You want to be right. Especially when you have a lawsuit against you and a lot of people with microscopes and microphones screaming, I think you're lying. Even Ellen's bruises, more than 30 across her body, some fresh, some healing, waved away. Dr. Simon concludes they're just incidental contact from activities of daily living. Apparently teaching first graders and doing light chores explains contusions on your thighs, neck, and forearms in various stages of healing. It's insane. This whole thing is insane. When you're given a mandate that says this thing better, make us look good. It's probably going to look good. A kind of stretch should disqualify you from yoga, let alone forensic science. Now look at the report's tone when it gets to Ellen's mental state. The pivot is almost emotional manipulation. Now, this is especially angering to anyone who does deal with mental health issues, which I would argue is probably 90-some percent of the population, with only a smaller percentage actually seeking treatment and help for it. And the understanding level of anything mental health-wise is low. But I'm going to assume that since you are watching this, you're smart. And that you probably have a little bit of education in this area and are going to see through the bullshit right away. So I'm going to approach it from that angle because I trust you. After pages of technical justification, Dr. Simon leans into psychology, portraying Ellen as a young woman suffering from anxiety, fixated on her job, her grades due that day, and her perfectionism. Hi, I'm not a teacher. I'm not a young woman. But I focus on similar things in different areas. And ending it isn't usually going to be one of them. There are anxieties, there are stresses. And for me, for many, you know, you deal with that. It's life, it's stress, and you continue on. She had no previous suicidal ideation either. But she notes that medication changes had helped Ellen sleep, but gave her energy to act on her anxious thoughts. That single line reframes anxiety as agency, a poetic but cruel twist that turns a teacher's panic attack into a suicide motive. Now mention that Ellen had just texted her friends hours earlier, joking about pregnancy cravings and complaining about paperwork. Not despair, not self-esteem, not goodbye. Now mention that her psychiatrist, family, and friends all said she was planning her wedding and had no suicidal ideation. Instead, we get a psychological narrative reverse-engineered to match the conclusion. That's the forensic cherry-picking. Dr. Simon leads heavily on DNA results that exclude the fiancé, as if the absence of his DNA on the knife somehow proves no one else was there. would have helped if they actually, you know, fingerprinted him or tested the knives. Oh, they didn't do that either. She mentions that the undergarments contained a mix of DNA from Ellen and her fiancé, which she says is consistent with cohabitation. And it is. But she never acknowledges the unidentified male DNA found in the lobby bathroom days later, except to dismiss it because Ellen and her fiancé were excluded. Why test at all if you're going to pretend it's irrelevant? It's the same pattern throughout the report. Evidence that complicates the suicide narrative gets minimized or rationalized out of existence. Evidence that aligns with it gets treated as gospel. And that's the real tell. Not the medical jargon, not the citations, not even the tone. It's a selective weighing of facts to fit the story. You can hear the institutional hum behind every paragraph. Protect the office, protect the chain of command, protect the record. Allegedly. And timing matters. This review didn't come out of nowhere. It arrived in the wake of a national reawakening around the case. The Hulu series Death in Apartment 603, reopening public outrage, showing the contradictions in vivid detail. It came after years of litigation, after state officials ducked responsibility, after expert publicly dismantled the unaliving theory that she did it herself. So what does the city do? It commissions its own chief medical examiner to re-examine its own files. And surprise, she agrees with herself. That's not independence. That's narrative maintenance. And yet, in the sterile language of bureaucracy, the report pretends to close the book. Dr. Simon writes that with all of this information considered, it is the opinion of the undersigned that this manner of death is best classified as a suicide. She adds that her findings are made with a reasonable degree of medical certainty. But certainty is the last thing this report delivers. It's certainly theater. A performance of closure designed to make the controversy look unreasonable. It's also a chilling reminder of how official language can erase outrage. Because once the Emmy signs off, the legal machinery locks in. Police can't reopen a homicide investigation without the manner of death changed. So by defending the label that she did it herself, Philadelphia didn't just preserve its reputation, it effectively shut the door on justice for good. And maybe that's the point. If the city admits the medical examiner's office was wrong, that the death of a healthy, engaged 27-year-old woman was mishandled from the start, it opens the door to more lawsuits, accountability, and public humiliation. But to double down, better to drown the paperwork than to confess to a cover-up. So what we're left with is a case that looks on the surface like closure, but underneath, it's the same uneasy silence it has always been. Because for every sentence of Dr. Simon's bullshit report that declares she did it herself, there's another unanswered question whispering, how? How does someone stab themselves 23 times, as you've now noted, including in the back of the neck, including post-mortem? How does a locked door become proof instead of a problem? How do we accept a finding that so neatly absolves every authority connected to it? The truth is, Ellen Greenberg deserves better than the bureaucratic neatness. She deserves real answers, not academic gymnastics. And the people of Philadelphia deserve to know that when a death defies logic, their own institutions won't twist logic to match the paperwork. Because this isn't just about one woman in a locked apartment. It's about what happens when the system investigates itself and calls it justice. And when you read the report, you can feel it. The science isn't wrong. The system is. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you'll find us as we will continue to cover this story until justice is found.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.